Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Coach K and Joe Show. The Coach K and Joe Show is
brought to you by Idea Fusion Media, Hubler and Sons of Jasper and Vincennes, Harmon Dental Care, and by Jasper Today.
Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schultheis.
And we're back with another edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. It's the Coach, Ken Schultheis, greeting you on this very, very cold Friday in the Midwest. Of course, the show comes out of Evansville, Indiana, and Jasper, Indiana, and we transmit via the Internet all over the United States, Canada, and the rest of the Internet world. Joe will be with us in just a few minutes. He's off to get our first guest, and we're pretty excited to have the voice of the Indiana Hoosiers. And if you have been waiting for the show to begin to listen to our first guest, you will be in luck. Don Fisher, the voice of the Hoosiers, maybe, folks, maybe the most popular and well-known person at Indiana University since Bob Knight departed. Don Fisher has been around for 40 years. 40 years, folks. The voice of the Hoosiers, Don Fisher, talking basketball and football when it comes to the Hoosiers, giving us the play-by-play, giving us a picture in words over the radio. And I, like many of you, have listened to Don Fisher for years and years and years. Many times have turned off the sound to the TV and just listen to Fisho, as I call him, Fisho, talking Hoosier basketball or Hoosier football. And then later in the show, at the top of the second hour, we'll have Gary Donna. He's a Hall of Famer of the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame, but you know Gary Donna as the person that really connects the state of Indiana when it comes to high school basketball with the Hoosier Basketball Magazine. He's been doing it a long time, folks. I knew Gary when I was coaching. Worked the top 40 workout, which is now the top 60 workout up in Indianapolis at the end of the year. It helps to promote our senior athletes in Indiana basketball-wise for college opportunities, as well as development of the Indiana All-Star team, which will play Kentucky in the annual Indiana-Kentucky All-Star Series. So Don Fisher is ready. We're going to go to a quick break, and when we come back, Coach K is excited. We're going to be talking to the voice of the Hoosiers for the last 40 years, Don Fisher. You're listening. Don't go away, because you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar Chevy Cadillac in Jasper. Have you ever heard a car ad that looks too good to be true or has fast-talking fine print?
Buy before midnight tonight. Maybe okay, maybe not. You probably aren't eligible for this event. Ubelar's prices are better, but you can't know that.
You want to hear Ubelar's fine print? That's right, silence. Our prices will save you money, huge inventory, even bigger discounts. Ubelar & Sons Chevy Cadillac in Jasper, where customers send their friends since 1929.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Cody Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. You're with the coach, Ken Schultheis, on what I described, and I don't do it as well as Don Fisher does over the radio, but it's a cold, cold day in the state of Indiana, but it's heating up. It's heating up now that we have Don Fisher with us. Mr. Fisher, good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, Don, excited to have you. 40 years of Indiana basketball and football. It's a year of football probably didn't meet some of our expectations, basketball in a little transition with some young people. If we can just take a couple minutes and talk a little bit about Hoosier football, we end the year not maybe the way a lot of the Hoosier fans would have liked it. The bowl games are coming to an end. Is there any? Do you sense any changes coming in the staff or anything that might happen up in Bloomington once the bowl seasons are over?
Well, I'll be honest, I don't at this point because I haven't heard a word. Things have really been quiet since the season ended. I know Coach Wilson and his staff went out recruiting for a couple of weeks, and after that, when they got back and the recruiting period ended, they went on vacation. Many of them were sent off on vacation to be with their families, which they hadn't had an opportunity to do since way back in the summer. And so, you know, these guys work their tails off all the time in just about every area, and they certainly deserve some time away from the game. And then, of course, when the vacations are over with, they get back to work as soon as school starts again. They'll start their training, you know, as far as the strength and conditioning, that type of workouts and those kinds of things. And they'll all be back in the offices again. But I honestly don't know what's going to happen, if, in fact, there will be any staff changes at this point. I know there were a lot of speculation during the season that that was going to happen, and yet I know Coach Wilson feels very strongly that the talent level just hasn't been good enough on that side of the football, and I think that's more the issue, I think that's what he believes is more the issue than schemes or coordinators or any of those kinds of things. We'll have to wait and see. I mean, honestly, anything can still happen, but at this juncture, I can't really give you an honest answer.
Well, I know that a lot of Hoosier fans, you know, are sitting in limbo. I think it's a mixed feeling for me. I want Coach Mallory and his staff on the defensive side to have great success, obviously. I love the legacy that the Mallory family has with the Hoosiers. And I also wonder, you know, just because you bring in a couple freshmen, it isn't like basketball where you bring in a couple freshmen and they can change your fortunes quickly. You know, you got a lot of people and a lot of holes, a lot of positions to fill on that defensive side. And I wonder if maybe coach's assessment isn't absolutely correct in that, you know, we just don't have enough talent on that side of the field, coupled with the fact that I think I, myself, along with other Hoosier fans, went in not realizing that Missouri was the team they were, that Navy ended up being the team it was. Some of those losses early in the pre-conference period where we thought we might get wins, hey, we ended up playing some pretty good football teams.
Well, that's the thing that people don't even take note of. I mean, when they start talking about all these changes they want to see take place with the coaching staff and those kinds of things, people don't recognize that Indiana's football team played the second toughest schedule in the country this year. And that
wow.
is documented. It was the second most difficult schedule in the country with Bowling Green, a team that won their bowl game or lost their bowl game, I think, by 3 points, but ended up going to a bowl game. Obviously, they were good. Indiana beat them. Navy is a team that finished, I think, 8-4 for the season, another bowl team, and they have done a tremendous job through the year, and they could have very easily been a 10-win, maybe even an 11-win team, had their quarterback not got hurt through 3 or 4 ball games during the year as well. So Navy was a terrific football team, and as you pointed out, and of course Missouri well documented what they did in the SEC. So you're looking at a program that not only won 5 ball games this year, but they did it against the toughest schedule in the country, or the second toughest schedule in the country. They did it with a defense that, as everyone knows, gave up tons of yards, tons of points, way too many. We know that the talent level still got to improve, and the freshmen that they brought in, many of those guys did factor in as the year went on. Antonio Allen, of course, was playing very well when he got hurt and missed the rest of the season with an ACL. Darius Latham came up and started playing a lot more as the season went along. So did David Kenny. So the freshmen that they brought in for defensive purposes started becoming more and more factors as the year went on. But as you pointed out, it doesn't take 2 or 3 guys on the defensive side to change things. It takes probably 8 to 9 and at least a playmaker or two involved in that equation as well. So it is so much harder to build football than it is basketball. It's just a very long, difficult process. And you're talking about a program that has had no stability in it for many years now. And obviously that's got to change. And to change a coach at this point, I'm talking about the head coach in that situation, to change the head coach at this point would just be absolute silliness. and that's not going to happen. And whether he's going to change his staff, I think we have to leave that up to him, because he's the one that knows best as to what he thinks is the problem and what needs to take place.
Yeah, Don, you're absolutely right, and I love how you bring the level-headedness and the common sense to the conversation. I absolutely am a Coach Wilson fan, and even though defensively I knew we had just a tremendous number of holes that we were going to have to deal with game in and game out, I always felt like, you know, we might have a shot because we can score. It's tough to outscore everybody, if you know what I mean, but at least when you can score, you have a chance to be in the game. And the Hoosiers took us on that wild ride in football several times this season, as I listened to you call the games, where that offense, you could just never say never with that offense.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, that's an offense that scored 28 points against Michigan State now. So that's telling you that this offense is pretty good. Now, were they superstar status all the time? No. There were games that they didn't play up to their capabilities. But I really like what I saw from this offense this year. They've got the tools to be really good next year as well. And you know, let's face it, you've got to have good quarterbacks. I think Indiana really does have two good quarterbacks, and I can see why Coach Wilson played both of these guys, because both of them have talents a little bit different from the other, and yet they can both run the same offense. So I did like what I see in that area, and I really think that from the standpoint of this football team offensively, they're only going to get better, because Wilson is a genius when it comes to offensive football. He may do some things that are a little unorthodox and some people would consider gambles and those kinds of things, but I like that. I mean, I think you're in Indiana. If you're not going to try something, then you need to go someplace else, like a Michigan State, where you can play conservative. But no, this is a football program that's rebuilding. I think it's on the right track. I don't think there's any question that the defensive personnel has got to improve, and that can only happen through recruiting. It's a process. It takes time. And as we look at it right now, you got to feel good about what you see coming back next year and how this program is right there to turn the corner. I don't think there's any question about that.
And before we switch over and talk a little Hoosier hoops, that would be the last question I would have for you, Don. I know there's a lot of listeners out there just like myself. We've got this juggernaut. I know I overstate it, because it's just exciting for me as a Hoosier fan to see this offense. I call it a juggernaut at times, the way they can throw that ball and score points. I don't want the next couple years to go by and we don't find at least an average defense to help complement it and take this team over the top to the bowl scenario. Don, do you see, with the recruiting class coming in, do you see more of those holes being plugged and this defensive team being able to, it doesn't have to be as good as the offense, but step itself up and get into that middle rung when it comes to the Big Ten, or at least where we need to be defensively?
I do think that that's going to happen. I'm positive that they're going to be better next year than they were this year. I say that because obviously they can't get a lot worse, at least from a number standpoint, if you know what I'm saying. Because from the number standpoint, they were right at the bottom of the barrel this year as far as Division I teams are concerned. But I saw improvement last year, even though they were not able to get it done in games at the end, that they weren't able to get the kind of stops that you'd hope that they were going to get. And I think another part of the puzzle here in regard to Indiana's defense is that everybody's defense is starting to have struggles now. And why is that? Well, part of it's due to the fact that the offenses have become so much more sophisticated. And there's been so many of the rules changes are allowing defenses or offenses, I should say, to have the advantage. And many of the rules changes that have taken place at the NFL level, and you hear this all the time, have changed the game. And the offenses now are so much more prolific than they've ever been. And it's trickled down to the colleges, and it's trickled down to high school sports. Defenses are really hard to come up. Really good defenses are extremely difficult to come up with. And the defensive talent that is out there today, Most of those guys know if they're going to get any recognition whatsoever, they've got to go to a really big time school from the standpoint of what it looks like in Alabama, those kinds of schools, the SEC type schools. That's where a lot of the defensive players go because they know they're going to get recognition in these high profile organizations. Like the Alabamas and the LSUs and the SEC schools and Oklahomas and so on. I mean, when you look at it, think about it. Defenses are starting to go backwards, and offenses have gone so much farther forward in just those areas alone that it's very difficult for defenses to play at the level that we used to see. You just don't see that many great defenses anymore, and I think a lot of the rules changes have that reasoning behind it.
Well, it will be interesting as we go into next year to see if this Hoosier defense can turn it around. Over to basketball, we've only got a few minutes left with you, which is always sad, but the basketball, you know, I want Hoosier fans to remember we lost Cody Zeller before he was supposed to go. We lost Victor Oladipo before he was supposed to go. Well, Hoosier fans need to remember that. We got a good group of freshmen. We have some sophomores that maybe haven't gotten to the level we thought they would. But a couple of things that have come out, questions from people that I have, is Will Sheehy a starter or is he better served coming off the bench? I know I have my answer. I'm going to throw that at you. Don, is Will Sheehy a starter or is he better served coming off the bench?
Well, let's put it this way. He's probably not having the kind of year at this point as a starter that a lot of people anticipated that he might, because I'm sure a lot of folks thought that Will would be the leading scorer and would be leading the team in rebounds and all those kinds of things. But Will is doing so many other things out there in his role as a leader on this basketball team. He's really facilitating a lot of what this team is capable of doing on the offensive side of the ball. And of course, when you look at Will and what his abilities are and his strengths, he's a mid-range jump shooter that now is expected to shoot the three, and that's only going okay, nothing great by any stretch of the imagination. I think that he is a terrific defensive player. I think he can guard any position on the floor, including the five in some cases, because he's done that throughout his career at times. And I think that Will is one of those guys who just is never really looking for his shot, so to speak. Therefore, you can't say that he's probably as good as a starter as he was coming off the bench, because you knew when he came off the bench he was giving you a huge spark, not only at the offensive end, but at the defensive end. That's where I think his real worth as a guy coming off the bench was, because he could get guys playing as hard as he was just from how hard he went at it himself. So in my opinion, if you just want me to pick one, then I'd say he's better coming off the bench. But he's got a different role this year. He is expected to be a starter. He's expected to be a leader on this basketball team. And from that perspective alone, I think that Will has done a really good job.
Yeah, I think it's really tough at times, and players handle it differently. Some just kind of just easily step into the position as a leader on the floor and as a player too. Sometimes the multitasking just creates some confusion for him and some focus problems. And I look at Will and I see where he's trying to do these other things, and I think sometimes it takes away from his ability just to play basketball. As I said, some guys handle that really well, and other guys don't, and sometimes they can be better served coming off the bench because they can let the game kind of get the movement of the game happen, and then they can step into it along with their other responsibilities. It's kind of a multitask deal.
Here's one other thing you've got to think about too. He is the smartest guy in this basketball team from a basketball, pure basketball knowledge standpoint. Coach Crean constantly refers to him in practices to let the other kids know what they're supposed to be doing in these situations. And that's another reason why they can't really afford to bring him off the bench right now, because of the youth of this ball club. They need somebody out there that knows exactly what they're supposed to do in almost every situation. and Will Sheehy is that guy. I'm telling you, he is one of the smartest basketball players I've ever been around, at least understanding what Coach Crean is trying to preach to his guys from an offensive standpoint, and defense as well. I mean, when a question is asked on the floor, often in practice, Crean often refers to Will to answer that question. And again, because of that leadership or that skill in itself, being a coach on the floor is another reason he's starting right now playing the minutes that he is.
Great point, Don, and I can see that 100%. The next person that comes up a lot is Yogi Ferrell. What a tremendous job he's done in improving his ability to shoot the basketball, not only just shoot it, but hit big shots. Is there a concern? You know, some fans will say it looks like Yogi's gotten out of control, taking ill-advised shots. I don't see it that way. I'm not so sure who else would take those shots, and I'm almost thinking Yogi might have to take more shots before all this is done. What are your thoughts on the development of Yogi, his ability to hit the big shots, and his decision-making?
Well, I think Yogi has transitioned just like Will has into a different role this year. I mean, think about it. Last year you had scores at almost every position, and Yogi was a facilitator. This year, Yogi, because Indiana has a lack of shooters from outside, has a lack of three-point shooting proficiency, he is expected to be that guy that does take the three-point shot. Now, granted, from a consistency standpoint, the very beginning of the season, he was still kind of up and down in that area. You know what he's shooting right now from three-point range for the season? 44%. That's phenomenal three-point shooting. That's Jordan Hall's type three-point shooting. So the guy is hitting 45% of his field goals and 44% from three-point land at this point in the season. I want him taking those three-point shots, and anybody who thinks that he takes some wild ones every now and then, I think more of his wild shots come from driving the lane sometimes and trying to put up some spectacular type of spinning move underneath the basket. And some of those shots might be a little bit more suspect than his three-point shooting. I have no issues right now with this guy taking every three that he gets a chance to take. And I don't think he's really ever taken too many that have been just way off the mark. And let's face it, if you're a shooter, you're going to shoot the basketball, and you're going to think you're going to make just about every one. And that's the mindset I think Yogi now has, and I like it. So I don't have any issues at all with him shooting the basketball. Probably the biggest issue with Yogi Ferrell right now is his decision-making. And he's had 58 assists this year and 41 turnovers. That's just barely over one-to-one ratio. It's not good enough, and he knows it. The problem is that he was dealing with veterans. Last year he was dealing with a veteran team, and he had a lot of guys out there that were at the right place at the right time, and he knew what was going to happen with these guys because they understood completely the offense, and they ran the offense. These young guys oftentimes are out of position, not in the right spot. He makes some passes sometimes. He's trying to force them in there, and those are decision-making mistakes that he's got to correct. But, again, part of that's due to the situation he's in right now with younger players. And the young guys make some mistakes. Therefore, it's compounded when he makes one, and it makes it look even worse than it is. And part of it's due to their inefficiency to run what Coach Crean's trying to get them to run. The other aspect of this team is really pushing the basketball. It is a strength of theirs because of their length, their quickness, and their athleticism. Tom Crean's trying to take advantage of that athleticism and that quickness, and the transition game is the way to do it. They push the ball as fast as they can down the floor, and I believe that a lot of the mistakes made have been of those variety of which they're trying to make something happen in fast break transition. So when you look at it, I mean, there's a reason behind all of these things that we're talking about. And granted, 23 turnovers against Illinois and 20 in each of the previous two wins over Kennesaw State and Nichols State were way too many. And it's just something that has to be addressed. And without question, I've been in practice two or three times in the last 2 weeks, and I can tell you that they're addressed every single day. Now, I thought that they would do a much better job than they did against Illinois. But think about how hard that team played against the Illini and how in that ball game they were throughout. And some of those mistakes were of the commission and non-commission perspective. And I honestly, I think that a lot of the mistakes that were made in that ball game were careless, were decision-making mistakes. But again, I cannot be negative about the way this team played in that ball game outside of the turnover area, because I thought that they played one of their best basketball games aside from that.
Yeah, sometimes freshmen are going to be freshmen, and when you push the basketball, as you stated, these things are going to happen. And Coach Green knows that. Just think back to when Patino started with Kentucky.
Yep.
Even more difficult for the Hoosiers is the guy that really needs to push the basketball and distribute the basketball. He's also got to be our offensive scorer right now, and that's Yogi Ferrell. Last thing, Don, because I want to respect your time, Hollowell. He's on the fringe. He's the guy that looks like he has the package. You wonder about him, and when I mean mentally, I don't mean brain-wise, just his approach to the game. He's right on the edge of which way am I going to be really good, or am I just going to settle back in? What are your thoughts on Jeremy right now?
Well, he is the question mark guy. I don't think there's any question that he has had some struggles. He lacks consistency. He really plays hard. I watch him in practice. I watch him in games. I don't have any issues with how hard he plays, because I think he really goes after it. His intensity level is solid and good. I think sometimes his facial lack of facial expressions and his demeanor would, for some people, I think that turns them off, because he is such a laid-back kid, at least from a facial expression standpoint. You don't see a lot of emotion out of him. But I think that's just his personality. And when you watch him in practice, you watch him in games, there's no lack of effort there or anything like that. The question on him is his consistency. And he's never been a consistent shooter at the college level yet. And that is something that I think he really has to work on. I've never liked his shot personally. And I say that, and I'm talking a technical thing here, and I probably shouldn't because I'm not a coach. But I've never liked the way he takes the ball up and shoots it. There's too much movement there. There's too much wasted motion, in my opinion. And to be a really good shooter, I think you've got to be fluid. And I think you've got to be able to just take the ball up and shoot it, where I think I don't want to say he thinks about it, but he has wasted motion in there. And so I'm not thrilled with that aspect of it. I do think he plays hard at the defensive end. I think that his consistency, however, is something that we have lacked seeing at this point. And until he becomes a really consistent performer, we're going to have these doubts about him, because he does have the package. He's very athletic. He's very strong. He can jump. He's not an explosive guy, but he can jump, and he can get up and down the floor. He gets after the defensive end. So there are a lot of things to like about Jeremy Hollowell, but the inconsistency factor is the thing that bugs me the most.
Yeah, he kind of flings the ball, and he just doesn't have the intensity in long enough stretches. Luke Fisher, good for him moving on. Is it good for Luke?
Well, obviously, you know, it took everybody – I mean, I say it took everybody. It took me by surprise. I was shocked that he left. That he announced that he was leaving. I guess I understand the timing of it. I also knew that he had a very tough time in the summertime when he first got down to Bloomington and started working out on his own with the other teammates and that kind of thing. He got very homesick when he was first here, and I don't know if that played into it as well or not. And maybe the injury at the beginning of practice that kept him from developing and getting as much playing time in the early part of the season as he would have liked had something to do with it as well. I can't answer those questions because I was stunned that he left. I know that Coach Green and everybody else said they were surprised, and I don't know. I don't know what his thinking process was, and maybe he's a guy that doesn't believe that the transition game is for him. I don't know. All I'm simply saying is, from Luke's standpoint, and I know he's a good kid and he's got a great family, that he felt like this just was just not the right fit for him. And so from that perspective, if he felt that way, he was probably right in making the move when he did.
Well, it's always great to talk to you, Don Fisher. And for our listeners, 40 years with the Hoosiers, but let's remember this. Don, you started out doing 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th grade football games. So there's always a process where everybody starts from to get to where they need to go.
Well, you're right. I did a lot of junior football down at Terre Haute. That was the place where I'd probably done more play-by-play than my previous job, which was in Ottawa, Illinois. And that 2.5 years I spent in Ottawa were great, and it got me a chance to be really bad at the beginning and get better as I went along without getting fired right away. And then, of course, when I went to Terre Haute, I was able to do 175 play-by-play broadcasts a year, so I got to do more and gain more experience when I was in Terre Haute than any other place I've been, and so I had an opportunity to start out small and grow as I went along, and that's, I think, how most broadcasters do it, and the best ones, I think, have some kind of a story in that category.
Well, thanks for being with us, Don. Ever the pro, but also the guy who relates to the common guy, the common Hoosier, we certainly appreciated having you again today.
Thanks much for having me. I enjoyed it, and we'll talk to you soon.
Talking Hoosiers with Don Fisher. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Kurt Kuksel, sports director for WBDC. We'll talk some high school hoops in the southern part of the state. You've been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar & Sons Toyota in Jasper. You know what happens when you sell a bunch of new Toyotas? You trade for hundreds of great pre-owned cars, trucks, vans, and sport utilities. Many are certified, have factory warranty remaining, fully inspected, and they're all priced to sell. Hurry in for the best selection. Ubelar & Sons Toyota, where customers send their friends for a great pre-owned vehicle since 1929.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. We go from a college legend to a high school legend on the airwaves. We've got WBDC play-by-play man, DC Broadcasting Sports Director, Kurt Kuksel. Kurt, how are you doing today?
Hey, good morning, Joe. How are you?
Doing great.
Well,
doing
Kurt,
great.
I'll tell you what, Don Fisher, he doesn't have anything on Kurt Kuksel, so we're excited to have back-to-back superstars on the show.
He's a much better broadcaster and golfer, no doubt about it. What's going on, guys? We're going to talk some high school basketball today. It's finally great to get back from the holidays. Most teams, the schools, getting back at it full bore this weekend.
Well, absolutely. And if the weather, it looks like the weather will hold off until at least Sunday. So all these games should get in. And we are going to talk high school hoops, and we'll also probably talk a little bowl football before we let you go, talk a little bit Alabama, talk a little bit of Michigan State, and, of course, Ohio State coming up. But let's start out with some high school basketball, Kurt. You are the play-by-play man for the Southridge Raiders, and Southridge has a member of the PAC coming off a great football season, a basketball season that so far has just kind of to seeing a rocky road with its start. Where are the Raiders at, and why are they where they're at right now?
Well, right now the Raiders are 5-2 after their appearance at the Graber Post Classic. They won two out of three there. They lost their opening game to a Brownstown, and Brownstown's a very good team. Then they came back with wins over Clay City and PAC foe North Posey. Again, the two setbacks were a loss to Jasper, in which they played perhaps their worst game of the season in that contest. And then Brownstown beat them badly, employing a full-court pressure defense that Southridge, in the first 18 possessions in that game, they turned the ball over 15 times. And once they got that settled down, they played pretty decent in the third and fourth quarters against Brownstown, but by that time the Braves were able to get control of that game. So 5-2 right now, and by all means they've not played their best basketball so far, but they get back at it tomorrow night at Gibson Southern. So looking forward to the second half of the season.
Kurt, I've got to jump back as a coach just thinking of what you just said. 18 possessions, 15 turnovers. What were your thoughts as that was going on?
Well, they weren't. My thoughts weren't very, very good because to be a team that maybe they're not the best shooters in the world, the best inside players in the world, but at least you got to take care of the basket. That's my number one pet peeve in basketball. I don't care if it's fifth grade to the NBA. You've got to handle the basketball and be strong with it and, you know, attack the, you know, even against the press, they're going to give you some things, and you got to take advantage of it. And I mean, you know, as frustrated as I was and the fans were, Jeremy Rausch was really upset because it's not like they didn't know that was coming against Brownstown. But you get after that, they turn the ball over after that little wave that they had. They turned the ball over like five or six times the rest of the game. And, you know, I guess it takes something like that to smack you in the face as a player to know that, you know, okay, coaches knew what they were talking about when they said Brownstown was going to press us like that. But after that was over, they did a pretty decent job with it. They got the ball in the middle. Then they, you know, out of that press, they were able to post up even in a kind of a transition situation, got the ball down low to Cody Thompson and to Chad O'Brien. So they took care of that wave. And, of course, the next night, Clay City was going to try to do that. They don't have the personnel that Brownstown had, but they were going to try it after they saw that and they scouted that. And Southridge did a much better job in that game and the North Posey game with that press. So hopefully that's something that's behind them.
You know, I got to see Brownstown play Bar-Even in the semifinal of the Graver Post tournament. And they have a nice team. And when you look at the two losses that Southridge has at this point, Brownstown, obviously, a very good team. I believe it had been ranked at that time. And then Jasper, take us back to that Jasper game. Jasper, of course, had come off being thrashed the week before by Evansville Memorial. Went to Boonville, I believe, and played a terrible, and I'm just going to be honest, a terrible Boonville team. They haven't won a game, I don't think. And they come in to Southridge to take on a solid Raider team. Jasper comes out with a victory. Some people were surprised by that. I always think when Southridge and Jasper plays, I don't care who's doing what, it's going to be a battle and a war. Take us back to that game. Give us a little bit of a synopsis about how things went in that game.
As I talk about the turnovers in the Brownstown game, that's one thing that's kind of the downfall of the Southridge. And the other downfall of the Southridge down through the years is propensity to jack up three-point shots. In the first possession against Jasper, they got a mismatch right away. Chad O'Brien got loose, and they had to switch, and he posted up against Jasper's freshman, 5'7", 5'8" kid. They score the first 2 points of the game. Then Southridge, throughout the rest of the game, went 2 of 17 from 3-point. The ball inside had a big size advantage. If it wasn't a size advantage, it was an experience advantage that they had with the aforementioned Cody Thompson and also Chad O'Brien. It was just one of those games where it seemed like every time, and they don't run a lot of sets. It's more of a motion type of deal. It just seemed like all those bigger kids were out on the floor and they would settle. To Jasper's credit, they took away some things, but maybe you shouldn't settle that much. And that was the story of the game. They just shot the ball from the outside and didn't work it inside, and Jasper took advantage of it. And that was a game where Austin Owls, Jasper's postman, went out with, you know, two or three fouls early in that game. And after 20 against Boonville the night before, Austin was in one of those games where it seems like fouls chase a player. I mean, he couldn't get into any kind of flow, and Southridge didn't take advantage of it. And that's why Jasper was able to get that six-point win. Jasper opened up even a 13-point lead. Southridge came back in that game to cut it to six, and it was a, you know, a one- or two-possession game late in the last minute before Jasper got that six-point win. But, again, and that's, you know, and that was one of those things as a coach, you go to the locker room, okay, you guys won't play like that. This is what's going to happen. You know, I've been telling you this is the way we want to play, but if you want to, you know, and it's a combination of, you know, the coaches want them to get inside, but sometimes the players, you know, whether it be because they were in different positions out on the floor or they just decided their way was going to be better, and which it obviously wasn't that night, that was the result that they got. And, again, they came back in the Brownstown game, and after they got the ball into the half court, they were able to do some things down low. But I think that bad shooting because they settled for threes that day sunk them against Jasper.
You know, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, coaches, as much as they institute authority and control over their team, there are just some nights when the players just seem to follow their own train of thought, and most of the times it gets them in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, you're coaching 14, 15, 16, 17-year-old kids, and I'm not to say if they did get the ball down low that something different would have happened, but I think that's what's so cool about basketball, especially these early season games on all levels. You find out what you can do and what you can't do. And sometimes in practice, you know, the coach say, hey, let's get a better shot. You can always get that shot. And sometimes the players don't believe them. Sometimes you got to go through one of those tough nights doing it the player's way to get your point across, as you well know.
Yeah, it's a frustrating time. You know, another thing I wanted to bring up, Kurt, before we move into some other subject areas, you know, Southridge was in the Graver Post tournament. A lot of tournaments, Christmas tournaments, as they had for years on the college level, we're now seeing those take place on the high school level. You had the Perry-Spencer County tournament. You have the tournament in Gibson County, the Toyota Classic. You have a tournament in Vincennes. You have one now up in the Eastern Green area. Are you, from what you see going through these, are you a fan of these tournaments where they'll play three or four games over a four-day period? Or do you think it's too much to – what are your thoughts overall, Kurt? You've been following this stuff a long time. What are your thoughts on these Christmas tournaments?
I personally, as a broadcaster and as a fan, I don't like them. Although it was my first time at the North Davies Graver Post Classic. That is just one well-run tournament. They take care of the players with things, with the, you know, the hospitality, the they throw a first-class tournament the Gravers do in North Davies. That was awesome on that standpoint. I just don't get the concept of playing two or three games in two or three days like an AAU situation. Call me old and longing back for the past, but I think on Friday and Saturday night in front of your home fans, that's what high school basketball is, and packing your gym. Southridge gave up two home games to go play at the Graver Post Classic. And I just don't think you should cram two or three games in a couple days period of time. Case in point, Northeast Du Bois went to Valley and played, you know, three games in 2 days and were sick. They lost two of the three games in that tournament, and they had two or three players out with the flu because they played a game, sat out one game, not, you know, played at 10 and played at 8 again. They sat out one game, then had to go back and play again as sick as they were. I don't know. I think the players might like it. I just think it takes away, because I know the coaches don't scout these like they would if it was a regular season game. You kind of just play on the run and do what you do. And I just, there's something special about regular season games in a situation like that. I mean, I may be wrong, and I may be thinking of the past or whatever, but I personally don't like it, and it's not up to me. It's whatever the kids like and whatever the particular coach's life.
Well, there's no doubt the Graver Post Classic is run as well as any tournament. I agree with you 100%. Personally, I'm not big on them. I don't see how they correlate to anything that you're going to do during the season. There's no stretch where you play three games over 3 days or four games over 4 days. There's
right.
nothing that you're preparing yourself for. Now, I remember the old holiday tournaments they used to have where you'd play two morning games and you'd play a championship and you play the championship that night, and then the two teams that lost would also play the game before. That had some similarities to the tournament structure with the regional, where you play morning round and then you play the night round if you won. So I just don't see the correlation. You can't say much for the Graver Post Classic. It draws extremely well. The crowds
right.
were outstanding. Most of the schools, I said most of the schools, not all of them, most of the schools are close together, which helps the fan base. But it seems like a lot to ask out of the kids and the coaches and the fans during the holiday period, not just for 1 day, not just for 2 days, but in some cases 3 and 4 days for these classics. But they've become right. even more popular the last few years than they were, and I guess in the end, Kurt, our opinion doesn't matter.
Well, that's right. And I'd love a DuBois County tournament to be played over Christmas, rotated among the four schools, the 1 day deal. I'm not going back to that, you know, when they made the 16 holiday term before, you know, Thanksgiving. That was a mess. But a 4 team tournament, you assimilate that regional, you get it in 1 day, so your, you know, the officials, your people that run the gym, you know, they can enjoy their holiday. But I think what the people like about it and the coaches like about it, if you play in one of those tournaments, you get an extra game. If it's more than 4 teams, you get an extra game. And I think they like that to get to 21 games. I know they do that same thing in baseball. If you you get 28 regular season games, you get 29 games if you play in one of those larger type of tournaments. So I think that's the allure. And some of the other allure is to play teams that you normally – don't play and
yeah.
go about it that way. And maybe that's good, but sometimes you get to the situation where staffers play North Posey, who they'll meet later on, or a bar, or even North Davies seem to meet. And sometimes to get the crowd you want, sometimes you can't help that. But I think that's the biggest key with that. And I want to ask you something. You mentioned the Toyota Classic, and I very much enjoyed your play-by-play, if you will, on social media of the Mount Carmel girls games with Tyra Buss. What did you think of her? Have you seen her? Was that the first time that you saw her? I've seen her several times. That young lady is unbelievable. I just want to get your thoughts on it. And Tyra Buss, everybody's heard of her. Not many people have been able to catch her games, but that's unbelievable, the things that she was doing.
You know, Kurt, that's a great question. And I got to tell you, now, folks, you got to understand something. I have been around basketball since I came out of the womb. I mean, my dad was a coach. That's what we've been around, sports, basketball, different things like that. And I can't tell you how long it's been since I went to a game and just was a fan. Usually, and my kids tell me this all the time, Dad, can't you just go to the game and be a basketball game and be a fan? You gotta sit there and why you gotta break everything down?
Yeah,
and that's my mentality. But I found myself watching her and becoming a fan. She is constant energy. She's all over the floor. I mean, folks, you may call up and say, "Well, she's not very good in this class," or you know, find some reason to be negative about her. I'm telling you, if you just want to be a fan and enjoy watching somebody play, you go watch Tyra Buss of Mount Carmel High School, Mount Carmel, Illinois. I think they got a big game coming up with Princeton again in a week or so at Mount Carmel in Illinois. And if anybody knows what happened in this Toyota Classic in that championship, which I am going to comment before we're done on because I'm mad how the official didn't let the kids finish the game. Tyra Buss, I watched her score 60. She scored 66 the next night. The night before that, before I saw her score 60, I think she scored 48. I mean, this girl, it's constant energy. She can pull up just come across the half-court line near the volleyball line center circle and shoot it effortlessly. She'll take you to the basket. She'll lock you up to draw fouls. She'll rebound. She'll steal the ball. She'll step you in and step you back for a three. She played Kurt. She's just exciting to watch.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And you break it down, it's not like she hunts shots. I mean, there's no doubt she's their main focus, and that's and everybody else understands that on that team. But half the stuff she gets, she just gets in the passing lane, or she'll just flat out steal a ball from somebody. And you mentioned her shooting, and you know, I can't wait to watch her play college basketball. And you know, she's a tad small, but again, it's you make up for a lot of that just the way you play and the energy. And you know, we've seen, you know, superstars on boys girls teams maybe take some plays off. She gets what she gets because it is full energy and it's full hustle and it's full basketball IQ from the minute the ball's tipped to the final horn. So yeah, I mean I'm just amazed the way that she's, you know, progressed and the way that she's, you know, led her team and the way she scores. I mean, it's awesome. And then to watch her play against Princeton, Jack Young's just a sophomore. She's been sought out by everybody in the women's game. And for, like, IU getting Tyra Buss and Mara Minsterman, who perhaps is one of the best shooters in the Midwest as far as girls basketball at 5'11", if you could combine those two to make one player, Buss and Minsterman, with Mara's height and Tyra's tenacity and whatnot, you'd have a heck of a player, but IU's getting two, and Kurt Miller's a lucky guy.
Yeah, Kurt Miller's a lucky guy. He's also got a pretty darn good basketball team this year.
Anyway, that was good.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing about Tyra, somebody asked me the other day, what can she do on the next level? I'm not sure what she can do on the next level, but I will tell you this. If you've got some players around her, just bring her across and set her up for some shots, because she will drain them. I mean, she doesn't shoot 10 times to hit 3. She shoots 5 times to hit 4, or she shoots 7 times to hit 5. I mean, and they're bombs. This girl, she can shoot. In that Princeton game for our listeners, and we're talking about high school girls game, Princeton, Indiana, Mount Carmel, Illinois, Tyra Buss had 66 points and probably could have had 70. She missed 4 free throws, which was odd for her. And Jackie Young had 39 points. They combined for 100 points. I mean, it's just, you know, Kurt, the other thing is you've watched a lot of basketball players, and I've coached some pretty good ones. Mike Lewis, they could score. She is doing this, not 20, not 30. She's scoring 45, 50, 60 points night in, night out.
And that's with the focus of the defense, obviously, on her. I mean, I've watched Ryan Erdy and those guys prepare to play Mount Carmel Jasper coach, and, you know, they're ignoring 2 or 3 other players on that floor. And she still gets what she wants in the framework of what they want to get done. I mean, that's not easy. And the players that you've coached, it's not easy when somebody tries to take them away, because sometimes maybe those other guys or girls aren't capable of picking up the slack. And you know you're in trouble when that happens, when you've got a good team you're playing against that's going to take away. But the great scenario is when you know that you do have a good supporting cast that can, you know, pick up the slack. But it seems like with Tyra Buss, it just doesn't matter. I mean, can you imagine the defenses that they've played against? I mean, they go, well, she's going to get her 50 or 60, so we might as well try this. It's not going to hurt. I mean, you know, in watching film and talking to Ryan and those guys, they've seen on tape just the different defenses and the different ploys that they've tried to use against Tyra Buss, and it just doesn't matter because she can figure it out and she just plays hard. I mean, yeah, it's something that I don't think we're ever going to see again, and we've been fascinated by it because it's just they're in the Big Eight and they're just, you know, we're right across the river. We've had a, you know, a front row seat, but I can't imagine this happening not only around here but anywhere else.
Well, the interesting thing is, and you already brought it up, the gal from Princeton's only a sophomore, and I think she's the 14th highest scoring girl in the nation. She's got 2 more years. I mean, it is amazing. Folks, I was sold, if you understand basketball at all, I was sold when I saw her come down and she dribbled two defenders down inside the key area between the three-point line and the top of the key. Then she V'd, she did a V, stepped back, and shot a three and just drained it. I mean,
sure.
That is a tough shot. That takes a lot of work. Most guys, when they do that, it's just great to see. But having a young gal on the high school level do that, she squares her shoulders up every time before she shoots. Simply amazing. Let's jump on to something else.
Okay.
We got a lot of people crying in Alabama this morning. Oklahoma comes up with a big win, Kurt, in the Sugar Bowl. Alabama, from the outset, did not appear to be the Alabama team that I'd seen earlier in the year. And I'm not talking about the early touchdown they scored, just the whole demeanor of that team. And Oklahoma did a great job. Coach Stoops did a great job of keeping the tempo and pace of that game, not allowing Alabama to settle in defensively, and came away with a big win for the Oklahoma program. And for Alabama, I'm not so sure if it's a big loss or, oh, well, we weren't playing in the national championship game. Your thoughts?
You're right. In some of these bowl games, you wonder what the motivation is for some of these teams. And Alabama, obviously, they're disappointed. They thought they were going to play for their, you know, third straight national championship. They lose that ball game to Auburn. Then you've got a month. Then you've got older kids that are kind of got one foot out the door, whether it be the draft or whatnot. And then you got a good football team like Oklahoma on the other side. And you got to question Alabama's mindset, what they were thinking or how they were approaching it. And that would be, I think, would be the case with any other team in the country. But I would think a guy like Nick Saban, I mean, I put full trust in him as a college football coach to have his guys ready. But sometimes as a coach, we talked about it earlier, you can't, you know, put your thumb on everything. And it just seemed like Oklahoma, maybe that they were playing a little harder. They were a little bit more prepared, or I don't want to say they wanted it more, but the start had something to do with it. Oklahoma got off to a great start, and then Alabama tried to play catch up and whatnot. But it's, in these bowl games, it's just hard to tell what motivation or what's going to happen in these games because of them being kind of an afterthought if you had bigger goals in mind.
And you made a good point, Kurt, for our listeners. I think he makes a great point. You know, you're talking about a team that has a lot of seniors on it. You're talking about a team that wasn't playing for its third straight national championship. You're talking about a team that had a month to sit and be told by everybody, man, how did this happen to you? What a mess. And then you make the great point. I think it's a valid point. From the quarterback on down, one foot out the door. And if you're not playing for a championship, it does make a difference.
Yeah.
When you got guys that are seeing in their minds greener pastures.
Well, and that's right. And I look at some of these other bowl games are the same way, whether a coach takes another job or a coach got fired and their team's still playing the bowl game. You've got assistant coaches worried about their next job. How are they going to prepare a team to get ready on all these staff? So it's not just on the players in some of these bowl games. College football is probably the greatest thing going right now, but at the end of the season, it's the dumbest thing going, unless you're playing in the national championship game, because they play the exhibition games at the end. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of factors. You go home for 2 or 3 weeks. Then you reconvene for bowl practice. This assistant's going with the head coach at his next job. Some of the other assistants are looking for jobs. Some of these assistants are staying with the new guy. On all these teams, there's always, when you pick these games, that's what I look at. I look at all kind of upheaval they have in some of their situations. And there's all kinds of things that you can pinpoint, but you can't pinpoint. And I guess that's what makes the bowl games fun, but it's very dysfunctional. Like I said, you know, the players, they're looking towards their future, but a lot of times so are the coaches preparing these guys for these games.
I think we're stepping into a new realm with the championship games now being
right.
put in place. These bowl games are just going to go further down the line in importance and prestige, and I think college football is going to change over the course of the next 5 to 7 years, and we'll just see where it settles up.
Yeah, I think so, too, and
I think that, you know, the bowl games are going to stay, but I think there's going to be more emphasis on maybe playing, you know, better teams in the regular season and stop a lot of these guaranteed games that some of these teams play, because you know you will have a chance if you drop a good early season game or a mid-season game to a good team, because you'll have a chance to get in that top four. Now it's all been about trying to, you know, go undefeated and be in the top, you know, tier of the VCS, but I think that's going to be part of the change later on down the line too, is, you know, just the way you schedule, the way you go about things, trying to get into that four-team tournament.
Yeah, absolutely, Kurt. Great stuff, Kurt. Thanks for being with us. We're gonna go to break here, folks. Catch Kurt Duxell calling the Raiders games on WBDC. He does a magnificent job. Thanks for being with us, Kurt.
Thank you, guys. Kenny, we'll see you.
All right, when we come back, we're going to talk with Gary Donna. He is the Don of Hoosier Basketball Magazine and really keeps the state connected. And when you're talking about a state with the length, the north, way north, and the south, way south, it's important. So we'll be talking with Gary Donna. We're going to go to break. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show. Well, we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. I apologize. We had a technical difficulty on the break. Some of you may have heard the words from our sponsor, and some of you may have not. I don't know. Joe is not on, or Joe is on. We're going to try that break again. We're going to go to break. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show. Well, we're back again, and I'm hearing from our listeners that we didn't go to break, so I apologize for that. We're back on the Coach K and Joe Show, and as my listener, our contributor from Indianapolis, just texted me and said, dead air, Coach, dead air. For some of you, you probably appreciate dead air. Joe is rounding up Gary Donna from Hoosier Basketball Magazine. He's going to be our guest here at the top of the hour. Interesting conversation with Kurt Guxell about Tyra Buss, the young high school senior from Mount Carmel, Illinois. She's going to be going to play for the Indiana Hoosiers. Kirk Miller, his undefeated Hoosier team. I watched her score 60 points the other night. The next night she scored 66. They played in the championship game of the Toyota Classic in the southern part of the state, Gibson County. They played Princeton, Indiana. On Princeton is the 14th highest scorer in the nation in girls basketball. Her name is Jackie Young. She's a sophomore. Jackie scored 39 points in that game before fouling out. Tyra Buss had 66. The game ended in controversy. And I'm going to take a couple minutes before we have our next guest and talk about that. This is why officials make me mad. And I've had some great officials. Steve Fisher, a great official. A lot of great officials. But they needed a Welmer, and if you know who I'm talking about in the Big Ten, Steve Welmer, great official. And they got a Teddy Valentine at the end of the game. And in my opinion, and if you're a listener and you don't like it, well, that's tough. It's Coach K and Joe Show. Teddy Valentine wants to be the focus of attention in the close game. Steve Welmer doesn't. Steve Welmer wanted the kids to decide the game, the players, the teams. That's who we came to see, the players. We came to see a basketball game between two teams. Well, here's what happened. Mount Carmel was in the lead. Few seconds left in the game. They fouled a Princeton shooter on a shot. A foul was called. Three shots coming. One of the girls picked up the ball and tossed it for Mount Carmel, tossed it in the air. Now, I'm getting this from one of the administrators of the tournament, not anybody from Mount Carmel High School, not anyone from Princeton, an administrator of the tournament. She tossed it in the air, not even in any malicing, menacing way. The official calls a technical on the Mount Carmel girl. So guess what, folks? We have a three-point game. We have three free throws by Princeton. Now they get two more and the ball out with 3 seconds left. The official calls a technical on the Mount Carmel girl, and I won't say her name. It wasn't Tyra Buss. It was a teammate who tossed the ball up in the air, but not in any menacing way. This is coming from an official of the tournament, an administrator who oversaw the tournament for neither school. The game is taken out of the players' hands, and they are shown up, decided by the official. It's ridiculous. It shouldn't happen. Here's what Steve Wellmer would have done. He'd grabbed that ball and he'd walked over to that girl and he said, hey, we don't want to finish this game like this. Next time, I will call a technical. That's how you handle it. These are young ladies who have played three consecutive games, three games in 3 days. They're tired. It's over the holidays. They are in the championship game. It has been a dandy. I think if it had been shown on ESPN as a high school game of the week, people would have loved watching it. You had the number one and the number 14 scores in the nation playing in this game. Tyra Buss has 66 points. Jackie Young for Princeton has 39. It's a three-point game. Princeton gets three shots anyway. They have a chance to tie the game. But no, the official decides, I'm going to call a technical. Look at me, the guy in the stripes. I'm going to call a technical. Could he open up the rule book? And would the rule book agree? Possibly. But you know what? There's a human factor involved in every situation. And it takes a Steve Wellmer to walk over and say, hey, don't end this thing like this. You do it again, I'm going to call it technical. Or it takes a Teddy Valentine to give the technical or kick the guy out or whatever it might be to let people know, look at me, I'm on the floor. And I'm going to supersede the efforts of these young high school kids. Now, if you're a friend of Teddy Valentine or a fan of him, I'm sorry, but I've seen him too many times over the years try to take center stage on game situations. He's not the only one. Great officials, when you find out they're on the game, that's the only time you know they're out there. Great officials become a part of the game. They become a part of the ebbs and flows. You know, I always tell my kids, and I always say, you know what basketball is? And they'll say, we know, Dad, a game of runs. They become a part of the game and at the runs of the game, but they don't stand out. You never know. As a coach, you'd say, we're going to have a good game tonight because this guy's going to be a great official. So I'm disappointed that in the championship game of a Christmas tournament, I would hate to see this in a state tournament game. I was a part of one back in the 90s where a technical foul, a foul was called on a player of mine, an intentional foul at the end of the game, which gave the other team the free throws and the ball out, and we had come back from 15 points down, and we were 1 point down, and they called an intentional foul on the ball coming out of bounds. So I guess you could say it sticks in my crawl a little bit. But when I talk to, and folks, you can say, well, you weren't there, Coach K. No, you're right. I wasn't there. But I made sure that I called one of the administrators over the game. Now, there was some other craziness that went on at the game between the Princeton coach and the superintendent of Mount Carmel, which is one of the kids' fathers, but that didn't decide the game. What decided the game was an official's call. What happened? Princeton went up and hit all five free throws. They took the ball out of bounds. Game was over. Even though Tyra Buss had a shot with 0.8 seconds left to try to put one in for him, it wasn't really possible that it was going to happen. So I'm a little irritated that you could have a great game like that play out, and you never get to see what really would have happened. So who would have won that game? I don't know. In the scorebook, officially, it says Princeton won. But on the floor, the game was never decided by the kids. The game was decided by a call, by an official. The game was probably way too big for this official. He was probably an official that did high school games, but he also probably did grade school games and elementary school games, wherever he could pick up a paycheck. I don't know. And I question him because he took the game out of the players' hands. He became the focus at the end of the game and not the players. And I don't like it. Maybe you don't agree with me. If you don't agree with me, you can text me at 812-480-9449. We're having problems getting hold of our guest, Gary Donna. Of course, Gary Donna runs Hoosier Basketball Magazine. I got to know Gary years ago as a young coach. He really did keep the state connected. If you're not from Indiana or from Indiana, the northern part of the state to Indianapolis usually gets the bulk of the publicity, the PR, really Indianapolis right now. So the southern part of the state would get left out a lot. We had a lot of great basketball players down here. You know, some of you may remember the great career of high school of Damon Bailey and many more. Well, Gary Donna helped get the state connected with media, with high school teams. You'd wait for that Hoosier Basketball Magazine to come out so you get an idea of what's going on in the state of Indiana by sectional, by regional, by semi-state, conferences, who was in them, who were the top players in the region or that would feed into regionals. He just did a great job of doing that. And we were really hoping to have Gary on. I know he runs the Boys and Girls Top 60 workout. Used to be the Top 40 workout. I worked that a couple of years. But we're going to try and see what we get. So, Joe, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here. We left a message with his secretary. I actually talked to him yesterday and told him that we set it up for 11 o'clock, and I tried his cell and his office phone number, and he's not there and not answering. And I gave the secretary his number, and hopefully he'll call us before the end of the show, and we can have him on.
Well, that's what happens in live internet radio. You got to learn to adjust, and we're going to adjust because we got so much more to talk about. We haven't talked about NFL football. We haven't talked about NCAA basketball. There's more to go here, but let's go ahead and go to break, Joe, and give our sponsors a little airtime. They do a great job for us. So let's go to break. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tony Uvalar with Uvalar & Sons Chevy Cadillac in Jasper. Right now, Uvalar's has a huge selection of awesome pre-owned vehicles, cars, trucks, vans, sport utilities, in most all price categories. And they're all priced to sell. Some are certified, and some have special low APRs, but best of all, they are all priced to sell. Uvalar Chevy Cadillac in Jasper, where customers send their friends for great pre-owned vehicles since 1929.
Hey, this is Coach K. Want to get the word out about your business? Well, team up with the Coach K and Joe Show and form a winning marketing team, and we can help put your marketing dollars to work 24 hours a day. Through our live shows and our 24-hour available podcasts, your marketing dollars can work for you around the clock. So give us a call at Milligan Communications, 812-630-2449, and we will help your marketing dollars to score for you.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tom Deanhart of the Big Ten Network, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. You are talking with the coach, Coach K, Ken Schulteis, and we are excited because we didn't know if we were going to get him or not, but he has. We have connected up with him. We've got, as our next guest, Gary Donna. He is the guy, in my opinion, as long as I've been coaching basketball, playing basketball, and now just a fan and talking about it on the Coach K and Joe Show. Gary Donna and Hoosier Basketball Magazine, it links the state of Indiana. It has been the thing that brought information about high school basketball throughout the state, everywhere in the state. There, as I said before the break, you know, Gary has been responsible. When you didn't know anything what was going on down south, Hoosier Basketball Magazine brought that into Indianapolis and into the northern part of the state, and vice versa. Gary Donna, great to have you on the show.
Thank you. Sorry, I was a little late. I was driving in a dead zone and delivering some of my magazines and had to get to a spot where I could get some service and get to you. So glad to be with you.
You know, Gary, it's interesting that you said you were driving and delivering some of your magazines. Here's the impression, the pre-impression I have had of Gary Donna, and then when I first met you years ago when I was coaching at Jasper, I thought, you know, this is another guy from up in the Indianapolis area. He's probably got a suit and tie on, and you never get to talk to him. You just talk to an assistant. Then I met you, and you were like a coach. You had the jacket on and sometimes the sweatpants and the tennis shoes, and you were out there doing the legwork, and you were talking to the coaches, and you were gathering the information, and you were putting it all together. And, I mean, you were hands-on, and still, what, 30 years later maybe, 26 years later, you're still hands-on with Hoosier Basketball Magazine.
Yeah, you know, when I started it, it was just a necessity. You know, we were the only statewide publication. We were the only media outlet that truly went from border to border. And in our early years, you know, what we heard, and we still hear today, although I don't think we're guilty of it, you know, the people up in the region say that nobody cares about them and Indianapolis ignores them. And then we heard the same thing for a long time in the Evansville area. And then gradually, as I traveled to those part of the states and met people and talked to coaches, and a lot of times they'd be surprised when I showed up. They thought I would, you know, send somebody. But and those were the days when I went to probably, one year I kept track, 212 games during the season between boys and girls. And I turned 70 years old last Friday. I don't go to 212 anymore. I still go to well over 100. And then I've got seven guys who go around the state with our magazine and make it available and watch games for me and check with coaches. And basically the reason we are in business, now this is our 44th year of our magazine, is number one primarily are the coaches. You know, they finally realized that I used to coach many years ago myself, and, you know, when the coaches realized that I was sincere, you know, I didn't have an Indianapolis bias, you know, that if there was a good player, I'd go see him wherever he was. And that was back in the non-class basketball days, and I still am not a fan of class basketball. But, you know, I still travel the state. I went to Hammond on January 1st and watched a good great girls game and a boys game, and then didn't get back till 3 o'clock in the morning because had to fight through the snow. You know, so I still do some of that, and people are still surprised that if they call my office, I'll answer or I'll talk to them. And I think that's been the secret. You know, I don't text. I don't fax. I don't Google. I don't email. I'm a old school human being to human being person. You know, I want to talk to people, meet people, and I know I've been down in your part of the state over the years. One of my memories is the North-South game, the year it was in Jeffersonville. Scott Rowland was there and got hurt on the last play of practice before the game and couldn't play in the game. And I always accused Mike Broughton of ending Scott Rowland's basketball career and causing him to play baseball. But baseball was his future, obviously, as he proved. But I remember that very much out of Jasper. And Karen that played there for the girls, she was really a good player, prominent in our magazine, and I used to go to watch her at Ball State. I go way back, I think, to Jody Geisler was a Jasper guy.
Yes, he was. You do go. You know, Gary, I never realized that you had been around. I knew you'd been around a long time, but you wear your age well, and your enthusiasm. I mean, people need to really understand. I'm talking about, in my opinion, I started right out of IU in 85 as the head coach at Washington Catholic and was there for 5 years and went to Jasper. Scott Rowland played for me, Michael Lewis. In fact, I worked the top 40 workout in 96 with you guys. You really did connect the state. I mean, coaches, when it was time to get our information in to Hoosier Basketball Magazine, it was very, very important that we did it right, got what we needed to get out there, because you guys did a great job of letting the entire state know, whether it was the region or whether it was the most state, you let everybody know who was out there, what teams were out there, what conferences were going to look like, what regionals were going to stack up and be like. I mean, you connected the state of Indiana when it came to high school basketball.
Well, that was our mission, and that was our effort. I remember going to Gary, to a Gary West, Gary Roosevelt game, and so at halftime I went up to where the radio was broadcasting and to just say hello and, you know, and see if they wanted to talk to me. And when I walked in, the guy who was doing the game was standing up, and he was on a commercial break, and I said, "Hi, I'm Gary Donovan from Hoosier Basketball Magazine," and he literally fell on the floor. I said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "I can't believe somebody from Indianapolis came to Gary." And then he and I stayed in touch over the years. And then likewise, down south, one year I presented the championship medals to the White River Peace Games that they had for a while, and the winner was a team from Evansville, and their coach was a guy named Mike Thomas. I don't know if you know Mike or not.
Absolutely.
He's real active in AAU basketball, and I went to shake his hand as the coach and give him the medal, and he said, "I don't know if I want to shake hands with you or not." And I said, "Why is that?" And he said, "Because you got something against Evansville." And I said, what are you talking about? And he said, "Well, I'll get your magazine. You'll have a bunch of pictures from other places, but you'll have maybe three players' pictures from Evansville." And I said, "Well, I always tell people we can't print what we don't have." And I said, "That's because the Evansville coaches don't send us any stuff." And he said, "Well, I'm a photographer." He said, "If I send them, will you use them?" So from that time on, he sent us all these pictures, and now he and Aaron Thompson even write for our magazine about the Evansville area. So that's been one of the, you know, Jerry Burge is from your area too, right?
Know him well. Know him
yeah.
well.
Jerry was another early guy that I connected with that fed us information from down there. And a guy named Pete Swanson, Princeton paper, he's another guy. So, you know, that's why I don't text or email and that stuff. I'm a human person, and, you know, I want to talk to people, and I want to hear what they have to say, and, you know, and I think that's the reason that, you know, we're in our 44th year, and, you know, people ask me, you know, how long are you going to keep doing it, and I tell them, well, there's three things that have to happen for me to keep doing it. Number one, I got to stay healthy. Number two, I got to have good health. And number three, people still have to want the magazine. And all three of those things seem to, you know, remain right now. So I know that I'm going to do issue number 45 next year, and then I'm going to be like the aging baseball superstar. I'm just going to sign one-year contracts. I'm going to do 1 year at a time. And but the Jasper area and that part of the state, you know, Washington and Vincennes. In fact, we're having our, let's see, it'll be our 26th annual North-South game. I referred to the one at Jeffersonville, where Chet Rowland was, but we're going to have our 26th annual North-South game April the 13th at Vincennes University, and that'll be our third time there. And we've had the game over the years at Forest Park. We've had it at New Albany. We've had it at Jeffersonville. We've had it at Paoli. We've had it at Madison. So, once again, nobody can say that, you know, we're leaving out the South, because that's just not true. I go clear back to the days and when Roger Kaiser played at Dale, and, you know, I can go back, you know, to those days and those places. And, you know, I've been to most of them, not all of them, but that's been part of the thing I've really enjoyed is, you know, meeting everybody and going all over the state and having people tell me that they appreciate, you know, getting the coverage, because they don't usually get that coverage out of Indianapolis.
You know, Gary, the fact that you have been around all those years is a testament, one, to your age, but two, your staying power, I think, has been because you've kept involved in the game, connected with the coaches, you keep track of the players. That leads me to a couple questions for you, and I know you can't be definite in answers because we're talking about a lot of years of basketball. By the way, I have your first magazine you ever did, so I've got that in my basement. But the girls' game, let's start with the girls' game. You really have seen the girls' game grow from its infancy, I mean its birth practically, to where it is today. What can you tell our listeners about the girls' high school basketball game in Indiana to where it's gotten to?
Well, I can tell you this. We were the very, very first media vehicle of any kind, anywhere, to include the girls. And that year, the first year when we put the girls in the magazine, I think it was 75, 76, we had 21 boys coaches contact us and cancel their orders for our magazine. They said, we already have to share our gym with the girls, and now you expect us to share your magazine, so don't send us any. And so 21 coaches canceled, and the first boys coach that called me about a girls player to recommend her was Sam Alford from Newcastle. And he told me, he said, I don't know girls basketball real well, but this girl I think is good. I wish you'd come see her. And so I said, I will. And then I got busy and I didn't. And I got another phone call from him that said, you said you were going to come see Lisa Dankovich. And I said, well, I've gotten busy. And he said, well, we play Rushfield tomorrow night at home. They're undefeated, number one. Will you come? And I said, yes. So I got there a little late, watched the game, and this one girl was hitting shot after shot. And I thought, man, she is good. So after the game, I went over, Sam and Steve Alford were sitting together, and before I got there, Sam says, hey, I hope you'll come to the sectional. That's the worst game that Lisa's ever had. I said, well, wait a minute. Isn't that her over there, the tan girl? I got here late, and I had her for 20 points. And he said, no, no, no. He said, that's Tanya, Steve's girlfriend. That's the best game she's ever had in her life. She's never scored more than 6 points. And from that day on, I always said to Steve, you know, the best shooter in your family was Tanya. And Pam was the first one. But, no, the girls' basketball has really grown. In the early days, there were so many bad games, blowouts. if you had even two good players, you were a state finals contender.
Yeah.
I remember early on LaTanya Pollard from East Chicago. They won the state. She outscored the entire Mount Vernon team that she was playing against. But over the years, it's gotten so much better. And, you know, proof of that, if you look, like Monday night, I'm going to go to the Purdue-IU women's game. IU's 13-0. I think Purdue's something like 10 or 11-2. Notre Dame is rated second in the country. You know, the girls' game in Indiana has really, really grown, and there have been some great players, Vicki Hall and Stephanie White, Katie Geralds, and I think the best player, girl, to come out of Indiana high school basketball, if you consider high school, college, and pro, is Katie Douglas, who was from Perry Meridian. She was runner-up for Miss Basketball. Then she was an All-American at Purdue when they won the NCAA. And then she's become a many-time All-Star in the WNBA and helped lead the Indiana Fever to a WNBA championship 2 years ago. I think I'd have to rate her, you know, as far as the best total career. But there have been a lot of good ones, and now it's not like the old days where you hope that a team has one player, two players. Now teams have depth, and a big thing has been and is the fact that in the early days when I told you the boys' coaches resented the girls, eventually it turned around where many, many boys' coaches who either got fired or whatever start coaching girls' basketball. And now I think 80% of the girls' high school coaches are male, and I know Greg Kirby, who is an excellent boys' coach, is going into the Hall of Fame this year as a girls' coach. He switched over to Valparaiso girls and had a great career and went to the state finals. So, yeah, the girls' game has come full circle, and I'm glad you asked me that question.
Well, I absolutely think it is one of the purest forms of basketball. The girls, you know, they play below the rim, and they have to play fundamental. And, you know, there's a young gal down at Princeton High School named Jackie Young,
Jackie
a sophomore.
Young.
She
Jackie can flat
Young. Play. And she just can flat play. Let's jump over to the boys now. I'm going to be asking you something. I know I can't pin you down on this, but the first question I have – maybe you can speak to. I think Indianapolis Metro basketball has really, really lifted itself. And I'm not talking about just from a few good players. I'm talking from a lot of good players and a lot of good teams. I feel like when we hit the 70s, late 70s, and got into the 80s, early 90s, other than some of the a couple of the good teams with the Montroses and things like that, that there were a lot of there were limited good basketball players and limited good teams. But I think Indianapolis in the metro area, is it growth of population? Is it more facilities? Is it the AAU? Is it more professionalization of teaching these kids in the off season? There is a lot of good basketball and good basketball players in Indianapolis.
Well, let me go back. I played – and my senior year, 1960-61, I played for Cathedral. And the final coaches poll, or AP, Associated Press poll, in my senior year, there were not one, not two, not three, but four Indianapolis teams in the top 10. Us at Cathedral, Crispus Attucks, Tech, and Manuel. And two of my best friends were the Van Arsdale twins, and they were as good as anybody. And they were state runner-up, and so even then there were really good teams. Now, what's happened in Indianapolis here, as you said, the county teams start getting better. You know, as a lot of people moved out of Indianapolis proper into the county and surrounding counties, then the number of teams that were really good, you know, kind of increased. And there became more of them, and right now, if I controlled basketball, I would not have an Indiana-Kentucky series. I would have Indy Metro All-Stars against the Indiana All-Stars. I would take Indianapolis, four or five surrounding counties, and we would pick 12 players, and then we would play the Indiana All-Stars, and then you would have more kids from Evansville and your area and up north in the region. And I know that I've heard 100 times, but we play good basketball here, and Indianapolis thinks they're better, and we're as good or better than they are. And I've heard from the region, we'd have more state champions. We get screwed in the semi-state when we come down to Lafayette by the referees. And I think the Metro Indy All-Stars against the Indiana All-Stars would be a heck of a series, and I think would be well attended. I would have it at Southport. Pete Huber, PAD, would host a great, great situation. And, you know, actually, let's be honest, when I was growing up, and probably you, the All-Star Games drew 10, 12,000 people. But now, despite Charlie Hall's efforts, you know, 6,000 is about as good as they can do. And Southport would hold that. And I think it would be a heck of a series. I mean, I think the people from northern and southern Indiana would relish the opportunity to play the Indy Metro Stars with their best players from northern and southern Indiana. But that's not going to happen because I know the Coaches Association wants to maintain the Indiana-Kentucky thing. And the Kentucky people are working as hard as they can. And, in fact, they're starting that series in 8 days, the Indiana-Kentucky Challenge. We're going to have one girls' team and four boys' team from Indiana play the similar teams from Kentucky at Freedom Hall on January 11th, and I'll be at that. But the Indiana-Kentucky series, truthfully, has become pretty one-sided. I mean, Kentucky can hardly ever beat our boys. The girls have become dominant as well. And if you go to the Indiana-Kentucky All-Star Game, which I do every year and have since 1954, you'll see more Indiana people at the games in Louisville, wherever they have them, than you will Kentucky people.
You know, Gary, you're absolutely right, and I agree with you 100%. Something got lost in that series, and when you go to Kentucky, it's very poorly attended. I know when Scott Rowland was an All-Star, he played for me at Jasper. Michael Lewis, they were All-Stars. They were still drawing decent crowds in Indy, but hardly anything in Kentucky. And then Farouk Muljazinovic, who played for me a couple years in Jasper, he ended up an Indiana All-Star. I think they moved. I went to the All-Star game in Kentucky, and they had it at Frankfort, and there was hardly anybody there. It's a sad state of affairs because for so many years, that was just the culmination of everything. But it sounds like to me, you've got this metro area and the rest of the state figured out. What's keeping you from giving it a try?
Number one, we already do what used to be the top 40 workouts. Now they're the top 60 to include more players. We do those in March and April. We do the North-South game in April. We've got a series we've done the last 9 years in the gym where they filmed Hoosiers called the Hoosiers Reunion Classic. And truthfully, I don't have the time or energy to do it. And secondly, I don't really want to do anything against the Coaches Association and Charlie Hall and Steve Whitty. I mean, they're doing their darnest to keep this Indiana-Kentucky thing going. And I've talked to Dave Satterley and Ken Tribbett in Kentucky, and they're doing their best. So, I mean, I hope that they can. But it's, you know, like I told some people, the Indiana-Kentucky series is like gasoline. You know, it used to be a dollar a gallon. It'll never, ever, ever be that way again. And unfortunately, you're never going to see Indiana-Kentucky crowds of, you know, forget 10, 12, 15,000. You're not going to see 10,000. I mean, they're working their tails off and they're getting 6,000. And that's just, you know, that's just the way it's going to be. And the two things that have happened, the thing that's hurt the Indiana-Kentucky series most is AAU basketball. I mean, back in our day, your season was over, and the only thing you had to look forward to was hoping to make that All-Star team. And the only All-Star game you really had to look forward to was the Indiana-Kentucky game. But now, by the time the Indiana-Kentucky game comes, guys have played 20 or 30 AAU games, and they've had years where they can't get all the players there, you know, on time for practice or whatever because they're playing AAU ball. And unfortunately, the truth of the matter is the NCAA, which don't get me started on them, but the fact that they've made the only open period in July, the poor high school coach is a second-class citizen to the AAU coach or to the AAU posses or the AAU advisors or the AAU. And I got a kick today in the Indianapolis paper. Luke Fisher's leaving Indiana. And who's representing him and who's helping him? His former AAU coach. I mean, so AAU has really hurt the Indiana-Kentucky series, and the fact of Indiana continuing to get better. And like you said, the Metro people from Indianapolis, you know, there's not much of a rivalry anymore. I mean, we used to really care. I mean, I remember listening to an Indiana-Kentucky game on the radio, and Indiana lost, and I was so upset. I mean, they really, now nobody cares. I mean, I've asked people, name one Kentucky player that played last year. Nobody knew. I mean, but I really think from a rivalry standpoint, I think the Indy Metro Stars against the Indiana All-Stars would really have a competitive edge. Because I know, I mean, I remember when Clint Keon got left off the Junior All-Stars, and I could name guys got left off the Senior All-Stars from Evansville or up north. I mean, they would love. In fact, let me tell you this. The year that we had the North-South All-Star game at Jeffersonville, up until that point, the previous 5 or 6 years, it had been the East-West Indiana All-Star game. And Charlie Jenkins, you probably know Charlie, don't you, from radio over the years? You know, yeah. Charlie asked me when we scheduled the game at Jeffersonville, can we call it the North-South All-Star game? Because he said, we feel like that we can play ball down here, and a lot of people think, you know, the best basketball is North. So that year, we changed it to North-South, and we've changed it and kept it that way ever since. So I really think that rivalry could really be a good one. But like I said, logistically, it's not going to happen. It's going to continue to be Indiana-Kentucky. And Kentucky, truthfully, you mean, look at the numbers. The boys can really not compete. I mean, it's so lopsided. And one time the Kentucky girls were ahead. Your question about Indiana girls basketball improving, you can do nothing but look at the Kentucky-Indiana series, and they've taken over the lead in that as well. So, but be
no
that
doubt about it. The pendulum has certainly gone the Indiana way, and it's unfortunate because I remember it was a proud moment when I had my first Indiana All-Star. It really was. Gary, before we let you go, I got to put you on the spot because that's what we do on this show every once in a while. Mr. Basketball, there's people want to know, is it Trey Lyles? Is it Blackman? Is there a sleeper out there that people don't know about? Who are your thoughts? You don't have to give me one. A couple guys you think are Mr. Basketball.
Our magazine that just, you know, came out a week or 10 days ago, we have three boys in the middle of the cover and two girls. The three boys are James Blackman Jr. from Marion, Trey Lyles from Tech, and Trevon Blewett from Partooter. And those are the only three legitimate, realistic candidates. Now, which one's going to win? Well, I'll tell you what will decide it. The state basketball tournament will decide who wins that. Who goes the farthest? Who does the best? And if it all comes down to pretty even, then maybe James Blackman has a little bit of advantage because he's going to IU. And I think that might affect some media people's or coaches' votes. Trey Lyles, on the other hand, I don't too many friends by committing to Kentucky. So it's a very, very interesting Mr. Basketball race among Blackman, Lyles, and Blewett. And then the girls is a two-way race. And here we go again, North and South. The North candidate is Whitney Jennings from Logansport. She's an outstanding player. Now she's going to go to Iowa. Now, the Southern candidate is Maura Munsterman from Evansville Modern Day, who's won the last two state championships, and she's going to go to IU. So here again, I think the girls' state tournament will have a lot to do with it. It's your Miss Basketball will be with Whitney Jennings from Logansport or Maura Munsterman from Modern Day, and your boys will be one of those three that I mentioned.
Well, great stuff, Gary. Hoosier Basketball Magazine, you can find it online. You can get subscription. You can get back issues. And I'll tell you what, Gary, I'm looking at your website right now. Gary Donna is not kidding when he says he doesn't want to email or he has his cell phone listed. So if you've got somebody that he needs to see or that his staff needs to see, you've got something to talk about as far as basketball in the state of Indiana, you can contact Gary Donna. Gary, great to have you.
And if you want a magazine and we've still got people that want it or calling, they can call me on that number and we'll get it out to them. And I'd love to visit with you guys maybe at the end of this month and talk about the girls' state tournament coming up. And then, again, I'd like to do the same thing prior to the boys' state tournament. So whenever you have time or want me to, I'd love to be on with you again. I've really enjoyed it.
Gary, we will mark it down, and we will have you in both situations, and maybe even later in the year when we start seeing people make commitments to different colleges and things like that. Once again, I mean, really, Gary, I mean this. I started out as a 22-year-old head basketball coach at Washington Catholic in 1985, and there was,
by the way, you go back in history,
and you have the Herb Schwohmeyers and his basketball yearly digest, and then you got to talk Gary Donna. You talk about somebody who has immediate respect when his name is mentioned. You're one of those guys.
Well, speaking of the Washington Catholic, I have been to the Birdcage, by the way.
Won a lot of games in the Birdcage. They aren't winning a lot right now, but we had some great ones, and obviously Toby Madison went on to be an Indiana All-Star from there.
You know who's a very good friend of mine to this day, and I talked to him last week. Dave Warland is the principal at Cathedral High School, and I went down and saw his team, Washington Catholic, play Switz City when it was L&M. It was a sellout at Switz City. So.
Yep, I remember that well, and it was the next year when he left to go to South Dearborn. I came out of college and got the head coaching job. So
Dave Warland and I
have been connected since then. My brother's in Indianapolis. Their kids go to Indianapolis Cathedral, and I talk to Dave every once in a while.
And I think you also know one of my best friends and a business partner, a guy who's shy, but you can sometimes get him out of his cell, a guy named Ron Eklinski.
Ron Eklinski at Jasper for a year where I got to know him, and Ron and I became fast and furious friends for a while there, and love talking to Ron.
Did you know he's helping coach at Cecina High School in Indianapolis?
Yes, I do. And what a sweet setup! They're going to try to become the park tutor on their end of town. I told him I need to move up to Indy and get one of those kind of deals. That sounds like the way to go.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's great. And also another thing, I want to stay in touch because, like I said, our North South All Star game is going to be at Vincennes University on April 13th. And as we continue to visit, I want to make sure that we get the right guys from the South involved in that game on April 13th. So I'll count on you guys to kind of pick your brain when that time comes.
I'm always available, Gary. I still get out and see a lot of games because I've still got that little bitty itch down inside of me that says if an opportunity comes, I may get back in it. So, but until then, I'm watching, I'm diagramming, and I'm giving my opinion.
Well, another real good friend of mine I just talked to yesterday, Larry Angle, you might remember him as well.
Heck of a coach and a
yep.
good leader for the IBCA. Gary, we're
yep.
going to let you go. Great to have you, and we'll look forward to talking to you later in the month.
Okay, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Good having Gary Donna, and we're going to go to break. You're listening to the Coach Canjo Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar & Sons Chevy Cadillac, Toyota Scion in Jasper. We've all heard the commercial, 15 minutes could save you 15. Folks, let me tell you, it won't take 15 minutes for us to save you money. Give Ubelars a call at 1-800-937-USA1 or visit us online at ubelar.com. We'll tell you the facts, treat you right, no bait and switch, and best of all, we will save you money. Ubelar Chevy Cadillac, Toyota Scion in Jasper, where customers send their friends for a lifetime of savings in 15 minutes or less since 1929.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Cody Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
It's not the U.S. Postal mailbag. It's not the Joe mailbag. It's the Coach K mailbag.
New York and New Jersey love Coach K. Go Hoosiers! Coach K speaks the truth! Woo!
Now here is Coach K and Joe with this week's Coach K's mailbag.
And this is Joe, and I've not been heard from a whole lot today, but I assure you I've been busy behind the scenes promoting the show and watching Google Analytics and et cetera. And, Coach, we've got four questions for you this week. Are you ready?
Yes. Just first of all, I want to just give a shout-out again to our guest, Don Fisher. If you are just tuning into the show, go back to the podcast later and listen to Don Fisher. He was on the first hour of the show. He was awesome. And, of course, Gary Donna. You talk about a guy that knows the history of Indiana high school basketball this last 40, 50 years. Amazing to talk to him. He is the guy that every coach looked for if you were going to get your teams or your players some publicity. Gary Donna could get it. And then lastly, Joe, you know, there's an impending weather storm coming with snow and Arctic cold temperatures. And I would just say to our and folks, you don't have to live in Indiana. You can go online to Ubelars and check out vehicles. This might be a great time to start looking at vehicles. And Tony and his sales staff, there's no one better than them. And obviously their maintenance staff as far as getting your cars in and making sure they're winterized and ready to go and you good batteries. And it's going to get cold, folks, so give Ubelars a call. And let them know and tell them that Coach K, you heard about him on the Coach K and Joe show.
That's right. And first question comes from Chris from Tel City. What are your feelings on the Luke Fisher transfer? If Bonlay leaves after this year, won't that leave a gaping hole in the middle? Not sold on Jerkin or Pariah?
I think it's a tough loss for the Hoosiers in the short term. You might say, well, what about the long-term, Coach K? Well, they've got the opportunity to recruit going forward. I'm not sure, Joe, you would know better than me, but I think we were either one over on scholarships or something like that. But Fisher has a big upside. I know you didn't see a lot of him this year, but he's long. He's got skills. And you might not have heard it, but if you go back and listen to the last couple weeks of the Coach K and Joe show, I had mentioned that Fisher may not be around. And I had mentioned to various people that I just didn't think Fisher was going to stay. I thought he was leaving. I had heard he was going to leave, although everybody acted like this came out of the blue. Even Don Fisher said it came out of the blue. Luke Fisher would not fit in the style we're running right now. But I'll tell you what. He should have went to Wisconsin to begin with. Bo Ryan, he would fit in perfect with Bo Ryan. But, yeah, I think it's going to be a blow to the Hoosiers. I don't think it's going to be a blow to the Hoosiers long term. And as much as I like Noah Vonley, I don't think he'll leave after this year. As the last couple games, especially I noticed against Illinois, and he had some great blocks, folks, don't get me wrong, he isn't developing a shooting touch. He's still awkward on his movements on the floor. And I think he needs 2 years in the college basketball. Now, if he's got a personal situation that makes it tougher for him to stay, no. But I think Bonley will be here with us for 2 years. Short term, tough on the Hoosiers. Long term, we'll fill the gap.
Okay, our weekly question from John Bots Magic Bodorf, from Jasper. Jay Cutler, 7-year deal. Lots of Packer fans are excited, and some Bear fans are shaking their heads. What is your take?
Well, with all due respect to John Goldsberry, a guest on our show and obviously a guy we love, I hope he understands. I'm just giving my opinion. Jay Cutler is an immensely talented quarterback. He throws a ball like a howitzer shoots a can out of missile. I mean, the guy has the skills. I have not seen the other part, the intangible part, that makes him a Tom Brady or a Peyton Manning or one of those guys, a Drew Brees. And you might say, well, come on, Coach Kate. Well, guys, Tom Brady doesn't have the arm strength that Jay Cutler has. Peyton Manning doesn't. Drew Brees isn't quite there either. But there's an intangible about them. And so Jay Cutler did not prove to me that he knows how to win. Even in the game against the Packers, they didn't win. You could say, well, the defense. Well, they didn't win. He got the ball and had an opportunity. They didn't win. And so I have to look at the body of work in Denver, in Chicago. There's something missing. Is he an immensely talented quarterback? Yes. Maybe there's not a whole lot of choices out there for the Bears, and there probably isn't. Is there more of an opportunity to take a chance on his talent that his mindset will develop and he will have the intangible it takes to succeed in championship football? Sure, there's probably that. They're paying him a lot of money. Good for Jay Cutler. Good for the Bears, at least if there's nothing else out there. But if you're asking me, I don't know that he has shown the intangibles, and that intangible is quite simply, are you winning the big games? Are you getting in the playoffs? Well, I don't have to answer that. You know the answer.
Okay,
next
ready
question,
for question
Jim?
Number three. Green Bay, Cincinnati, and Indy have not sold out their first-round playoff games. Do you feel that the NFL has outpriced the average family's budget? This is from Mike in Washington.
Mike, there's no doubt they've outpriced the average fan. But I think I may be wrong, but I think the Colts were only 3,000 tickets away from selling out. I don't know what Cincinnati and Green Bay was. If I was the Cincinnati people, I'd sure as heck buy those tickets. Weather is, I think, has a concern. I mean, let's think about this, folks. And if this weather pattern continues, can you imagine the Super Bowl in New York? I mean, we're talking about going back to the days of the Ice Bowl with the Packers. I mean, do you want to pay $200, $9 for a beer, $6 for a hot dog, to sit out in weather that's 20 below zero, wind chills? Now, Indy's a different deal. Indy's indoor stadium. But I think they were only 3,000 away. But if you're asking me, the logical answer is yes, they're outpricing the average fan. It's just tough. But, you know, they figure it's playoffs. Places like Green Bay, they live for the playoffs. Places like Cincinnati, my God, to get in the playoffs, they should be happy. They should be ecstatic. They should borrow the money, use the credit card. And in Indy, there's no excuse other than Colt fans have gotten lukewarm. And listen, Colt fans, I'm just going to lay it on you right now. And I know we got listeners in Indy for sure. You Colt fans are lukewarm. You guys are always talking big. And then the Colts went through a little bit of a struggle this year, and they're not a great team. But they can win their first round, but they can lose their first round. And I think you're lukewarm. And if you're not buying the tickets, I think it's because you're lukewarm. So that's where I'm at on that, Joe.
Okay, we've got 30 seconds till we're done live. We invite everybody to continue listening to the podcast afterwards to hear what Coach K has to say on his last question. Last question, What do you see Mitch McGarry's injury doing to the Michigan Big Ten hopes and postseason aspirations? Josh from Jasper.
Well, Josh, I'm going to tell you right now, Michigan's not going to – they're going to make the tournament probably. They're 9-4. They had a big win over Minnesota at the Barn. McGarry being out is critically – it's going to hurt them big time. They have no inside game. Their perimeter is shoddy this year. I think Coach Beilein is just going to do a great job to get him in the NCAA tournament. I'm sorry, folks. That's just the way I feel about Michigan. I don't like their style of play. And without a guy that can take the ball and post you up and be strong on the inside, I think it's going to be even tougher. So Michigan, there ain't going to be any maize and blue going very far in the tournament. I'm
okay,
done, Joe.
Well, that's all the questions we have this week. We invite people to email their questions in to info@CoachKandJoeShow.com. Get on Facebook, find us on there, Coach K and Joe Show, and ask your question there. You can get on Twitter at Coach K and Joe Show, and text me at 812-630-2449, or you can text the coach at
812-480-9449, and I will answer all texts.
Okay, well, Coach, any big plans? I know we got the snow coming, weather coming, but we've got the weekend before we get to that. Any big games you're going to? I'm planning on attending the Jasper versus Central game tonight at Jasper, and tomorrow night, I don't know if I'll go up to the Jasper Paoli game or not, but I do know the Jasper girls and Ryan Ernie are going to be taking on the number one team in the state and nationally ranked Bedford North Lawrence Stars, who are coached by none other than Damon Bailey.
Is that game at Jasper or at Bedford?
It's at Bedford.
Okay, well, that'd be interesting. And Jasper plays two games this weekend?
Yes, we play Central at Jasper tonight, and we play at Paoli tomorrow night.
I think Paoli's undefeated, aren't they?
I don't know much about Paoli. I don't know. I have a hard time keeping track of the county schools.
I thought I saw where Paoli was undefeated. I think Jasper will win tonight's game against Central by 10. Central has some good athletic kids, but they are very sloppy with the basketball and very undisciplined. I think Jasper wins that game. And Paoli, I'm not sure. I think Paoli's undefeated. Obviously, they've got some good kids coming out of that football season, and they take their sports pretty seriously there. But I always got to pull for the Cats. I'm a Wildcat deep down inside and always will be. So we'll see what happens. But that'll be a lot of fun if you like girls basketball and watching a legend like Damon Bailey coaching on the girls' side, and I know they got a really nice team, and I think his daughter plays, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so.
Yeah. So a lot of good stuff going on before the snow hits and then the ice-cold weather. And, folks, get your cars checked. Get your batteries checked. Go see Tony Ubelor and his guys out at Ubelor and Sons, and get those batteries checked before this cold. We're going to hit cold weather we haven't seen in Indiana since 95, they're saying. And, Joe, it was cold enough this morning. I think it was zero up in Indy and 12 degrees down here. And we're supposed to see minus temperatures.
Yep, it's going to be a tough weekend. And, you know, you keep warm, cuddle with Janet and watch a movie and, you know, stay warm.
Oh, we've got that flu bug running through our house. I'm just getting over it. My daughter's just getting over it. My wife just started with it. That little pesky bug gets down in there and gives you havoc for about 36 hours.
Well, I'm glad we did the show not in the same room then.
It's good that we're remote, isn't it, Joe? Done by phone. Don't have to put anybody in the same room.
That's right.
Well, Joe, one last thing before we sign off. I know we're over on the lifetime, but the Big Ten, real quickly. We've got Wisconsin, big win over Northwestern last night. When I say big, I mean by a lot of points. Michigan State, solid. The Big Ten, and I don't feel that bad for IU as far as having a young team, because I just am not sold on the Big Ten as a conference, even though, what, three of the teams are in the top five or seven in the country? Wisconsin, Michigan State, and who am I missing, Joe? Didn't they just play Purdue?
In Ohio State, yep.
Ohio State, excuse me. Sorry, Thad Mata. I can't believe I forgot that. I do not believe, you know, they were talking on the Purdue game. I watched the Purdue-Ohio State game. I thought Purdue played really well. I knew they were going to have problems at the end because of shot selection. But having said that, one of the announcers said Ohio State could be a Final Four team. I don't see it. And you know, I was wrong about Michigan last year. But I just don't see it. I think the Big Ten, even Wisconsin, you know, Wisconsin's that kind of team that can win 15 in a row and then go out and play somebody that they're not used to playing and look pretty bad. So, man, I don't know. I don't know about the Big Ten.
Yeah, I'm not sold that it's a top conference. We'll see. I guess we'll get a little respect from how tough it was last year. But we'll see. I mean, there's going to be some teams at the top. There's going to be some teams at the bottom. You know, I'm just being a Purdue fan, not quite sure where they fit in. Just you said shot selection, too many floaters in the lane. And I would like to see, you know, right now, Coach Painter's got a situation where he's got some individuals. He's got to try to mold them into more of a team. A.J.
Yes,
Hammonds, though, the encouraging thing was A.J. Hammonds.
Individuals, Joe, and I'll tell you what. If they ever unleash the inner beast that is A.J. Hammonds, that guy could be, I mean, he is huge.
Yeah, and he played real well against Ohio State, which is funny because, you know, there were games this season already against Siena and et cetera where he's just been a non-factor against really bad competition. So hopefully Big Ten season has inspired him and he can just start the turnaround. So,
all right. Well, we're 7 minutes over, Joe. You just take us home. And, again, thanks for joining us for the Coach K and Joe Show this week. Next week we're going to have Dane Fife, Michigan State assistant, on the show, as well as who's our other guest, Joe?
N.D. Kendrick. He's a Southern Indiana basketball, but he's also a recruiting guru that goes around all these AAU tournaments and gives reports quite a bit. So he's got his ear to the ground as far as recruiting, and you can join us and maybe, or you know, even send a question about a recruit that you're possibly thinking and wanting to find out about.
Yeah, that would be a great time for our listeners to send in some questions regarding potential recruits out there and get an idea of what some of these recruiting services think about them. So stay warm, folks, and make sure that if you go out on the roads once this storm hits and the cold weather, that you're prepared in case something happens. And thanks for listening to the show. Take us home, Joe.
Okay, and for Coach K, I invite you all Friday and Saturday. You know, it will be a little cold, but the roads will be fine. And invite you all to go to a high school basketball game, whether it be a boys or girls game, for what you pay. It's great entertainment. And this is Joe Milligan for Coach K signing off for this week. We'll see you next week on the Coach K and Joe Show.
The following presentation of the Coach K and Joe Show was brought to you by Idea Fusion Media, Ubelor & Sons of Jasper and Vincennes, Harmon Dental Care, and by Jasper Today. See you next week.